This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on January 20, 2026 in Seneca Falls, New York.
I would like to start out again this afternoon like I did this morning. I would like to. And tie back into some thoughts that we've already heard and share some things that had meaning to me. And so I listened to Paul's presentation. I was outside in the foyer out here for part of it. And so like I said, I'd like to continue on with that. I'd like to pick up some things that I appreciated there and tie them into my presentation, my thoughts. But I'm not going to. And here's the reason I'm not going to is because I think I can get started. I'm not sure I can get stopped. So I just want to reiterate once again, we come to share a little something about our own life journey, but also we come to learn and to receive, and we've certainly received a lot here, haven't we, even since lunchtime. I'd like to begin here this afternoon with a little story. I shared a little bit about my life and our family business journey. I shared with you, I think, that it was a small family business, and it gives us warm-hearted memories to remember our business life with our family, and we were open for 12 years. I shared that with you, but it was small. It was a small business. We never, in all the 12 years of business, it was growing rapidly toward the end, and we couldn't hardly contain it in a way. Part of what was going on is we were losing our workforce. Our daughters were getting married and moving away. I told somebody here earlier that when I was growing up, Pennsylvania was like a foreign country to me. And I'd never been there in my life, and I never imagined that our oldest daughter would marry and move to Pennsylvania. But she did, and she married I'm going to get lost in the date. She married 3 years after we opened our store. She was 16. And we knew we had a window of opportunity to experience that family farm that I was telling you about earlier. And we needed to get with the program. And so we opened it when she was 16, she got married when she was 19, and she lives in Pennsylvania today with her husband, and they have four beloved children. We have four beloved grandchildren there, and that's the journey of life that is ours now. It's not our small business back there in Sawyer. And so we closed on October the 19th of 2024. And 3 weeks to the day after we closed, we had a fourth wedding in our family, and that was the fourth of our four older daughters. And really, our entire purpose for having a family business at that season of life married away. And we're happy with that. And life has moved on. But anyway, I'm sensitive to this thing about small. So we intended to be a small business. We didn't know how many years we'd be in existence, but when we started, we talked about this. This business might have a fuse, if you will, of maybe 10 or 12 years, because we knew that our oldest was 16, and we knew that we were primarily creating a business opportunity for our four older daughters, an opportunity to work together with them in a family farm type environment, and to give them a place to work alongside their dad and their mom in part, but their dad, before they left home and not have to go to McDonald's or somewhere else to work. And so that was fulfilled. I've already shared that. So anyway, back to this thought of being small, though. We were small, and we're aware of those kinds of things. And I think we men are aware of that. We're aware. I was a very small business. Never had a million in sales. That's a small number in today's world, but we never had it. We never had a million in sales. And I'm aware of the fact that there are businesses, even here today, that are big. They're big businessmen. And we know that doesn't matter, does it? And yet we men we're aware of these things. And I went to an AF seminar in another area some time ago. And I got to know some people there, and we shared some of the same thoughts there, similar thoughts anyway, similar story to what we've shared here with you today about our small family business. And there's somebody there, and I didn't know him personally, but I knew because some people had worked for him, and I knew who he was, and I knew a little bit about his business, and I knew that in the whole realm and spectrum of businesses in the room, I knew that I was a little fish, and I knew that he was a big one. I just knew that. he was a big fish, and I was, I mean, we're just aware of those things. I don't want to say I was intimidated, but I was aware. I was just aware. And so we gave two talks there like we did here, similar to here, and we went through the food line then, and I was all relaxed because I was done for the day, and we were going through the food line, and I got close to this man. I'd never met him before in my life, and he kind of sidled up to me and joined me in the food line, and he said, I really appreciated what you shared this morning, and he said, I'd like to eat lunch with you if I could. And I don't know if this resonates with the rest of you men or not, but I kind of thought, oh, you know, I'm the little fish and he's the big fish, and I just thought, I wonder what we might talk about. And so we got our food, and he was very friendly and accommodating, and we went over and sat down, and we connected a little bit over our families and our ages and so forth. But then he said this, and I haven't forgotten it. He said this. He said, I really appreciated what you shared this morning. And he said, you've done something that I've never been able to do before in my life. And I thought, what in the world have I ever done that he hasn't been able to do? I sensed that much. I just thought, what in the world did that be? And he kind of, I didn't say anything. I just thought, well, what am I going to do with this? And he said, you've been able to end something. And he said, all I've ever been able to do is start things. And he said, I have a family that's been crying out to me to figure out how to stop what we're doing. And he said, we can't sustain what we're doing anymore. And he said, they're crying out to me and trying to figure out how to stop what we're doing. And he said, I'm not saying everything that we've done, everything we touch turns to gold. But he said, we have grown by leaps and bounds, and this business has just exploded for us. And he said, we don't know how to stop anything that we're doing. And of course, it's an oversimplification to just say, well, we just plan to stop. But really, that's kind of what I came back around to, because we had talked about business planning, and we said in the earlier session that business planning is all about being intentional and purposeful. And I don't mean to imply in any way, shape, or form, and I hesitate even to tell that story, because that's not a B&W story. I was actually kind of quivered in my shoes, and I didn't think I had anything to brag about. But he's just saying, you taught me that you can close something and not just open it. And you can say no and not just yes. And you can end something in the will of God and not just always begin. We figure this out among, and this is partly just sociology. All people are this way everywhere, but it's this way among the Anabaptist circles as well. There are people who do have kind of, we call it sometimes the Midas touch. Everything they touch turns to gold, and there are those who struggle more to make things happen in business. One is not more right and the other's not more wrong, but self-awareness compels us to be aware that some of you, might have to work harder to say no and to bring something to a conclusion and to limit it and to restrain it and not just experience unbridled growth in whatever good way even that may be. So you've done something that I've never been able to do. You've been able to end something and not just begin it. Well, that's given us a lot to think about, and we thank the Lord for that. I'm going to talk a little bit about our journey here this afternoon, and I'm going to kind of end at a place where we didn't necessarily feel all that successful in closing our doors. But anyway, I'll just tell you about that a little bit later on. The next thing I want to talk about is, what is the business planning process? I shared a definition this morning of what is a business plan. And I said, if it's not written down, you might have a plan for your business, but you don't have a business plan. Well, equally important, I want to define, what is the business planning process? The process of business planning is a path of discovery, and what that means is you don't know what it's going to hold. We go into a process of business planning that will lead us to a plan for our business that is kind of new territory for us. What I'm saying here is, it is, business plans are not written by declaration, where the dad or the chief says, this is the way it's going to be. But rather, they involve a path of discovery. For us, it was a family, my wife and I primarily. And then our children brought in, and we listened to their input and had business meetings at times, not always perfectly or on time, but business meetings even with them. involving business owners and others with an interest in the future of the business, giving them ownership by way of giving them input into the process of speaking into what our business is and what it's becoming. We flew out Monday morning, my wife Ruby and I, we flew out of Eisenhower International Airport in Wichita. And of course, Eisenhower is our only Kansan who was president of the United States of America. And I don't know if this is just trivia, this is just an aside, but I don't know if all of you knew or not, he's probably the only U.S. president who's actually grew up in a home that was taught the non-resistant, non-violent principles of Jesus. He was born in a River Brethren home up in Abilene, Kansas. Anyway, we flew out of Eisenhower National Airport, and there was a little brass statue of him and a plaque, and I admit I didn't even go over and read it as we went by, but it's there in the airport. And so I have Dwight on my mind just a little bit. And Dwight, if I'm not mistaken, as a general in the U.S. Army there in World War II, he said something like this, and this may not be precise, but I think I'm going to get the gist of what he said. And I'm relating to this path of discovery, but he said, "Plans are worthless, but planning is essential." It seems like kind of a paradox, but he said, "Plans are worthless, but planning is essential." That's this path of discovery. That's evaluating our situation and our resources and our view of kind of where we want this ship to go, if you will, and that process of working at it together and arriving at a sense of direction, that's essential. And yet when we're done, the plan is, I mean, it's just a piece of paper. And it's better than worthless. It's useful for reference and it's useful for communication perhaps, but that's what he said in planning in the military. Plans are worthless, but planning is essential. So the process of business planning is a path of discovery. I'd like to share a graphic now. I think I told you earlier that we have in Anabaptist Financial, we've developed a business planning model. And even this graphic here is part of our model. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about this graphic and what it means. But I just want to say this. It contains some universal truth here. Our model is not necessarily proprietary or, you know, like you're not going to have a useful business plan if you don't follow the particular language that we use. I don't mean that at all. But I'm using this just to illustrate that a business plan contains three things. And I'm going to call them views or vantage points. And every successful business plan is going to include these three vantage points, the way that we look at our business. And they are a dimension or a view of long-term strategy. So really, who are we and where are we going in the big picture? I think it was Daryl this morning that said it's pretty easy to say, well, where we're going in the big picture is we all want a home in heaven with the Lord and the saints of the ages. He said, I think he said, if I'm not mistaken, that's pretty easy. And then Paul, a little bit ago, said something about it's his desire that all of his children would be there with him in heaven. And that's another beautiful expression of what we desire, what we're trying to accomplish. But he said, one of them said, what about now? What are we doing today that actually moves us in that direction? Well, that's really what long-term strategy is. It's looking out 3 or 5 or 10 or 20 years, and it's just saying, who do we want to be? And where do we really want to go in the long term in business? And we're not talking about growth in sales and profits, but really, what are we trying to accomplish? What is the purpose? There was a session earlier that Gary had about business's mission, and those are the kinds of thoughts that belong here in long-term strategy. What is the purpose of our being? And then our annual strategic plan is when we look at the year ahead and we decide what is the step that we're going to take forward in the next year? What is the priority? What is the strategic objective of the next year? I shared on the side with somebody earlier that, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with those Matt Snyder books, and I don't know him personally or anything, but our son got into reading some of his books. You know, he moved from Pennsylvania up to Alaska, and and a bunch of interesting stories and titles of his books, and you know, going off the cliff with the limo and all that fun stuff. And our son kind of ate some of that stuff up. Well, he wrote one of his books up there in Alaska. He got into fishing and he had a boat. And of course, the boat went down and so forth. But he wrote a book called The Year of Much Fishing. Well, I'm going to hold that up as kind of a metaphor of an annual strategic plan. An annual strategic plan is when we're done saying what we want to be as a business and where we're going in the long term, but what specifically is going to characterize our year ahead. That's our annual strategic plan. Are we going to grow our business? Are we going to maintain? Are we going to start selling raisin cream pies? Or actually, I said that's just a tactic. Well, maybe we're going to open a discount grocery. That's an example of an annual strategic plan. And then we're going to begin to form our other plans and goals and budgets and so forth around that annual strategic plan, the year of much fishing. And then within that is our action plan. And that's where we specify in our planning who is going to do what by when and with what resources. Who is going to do what by when? And we're going to break these down and talk about them a little bit more fully. But note the process cascades from the big picture to the details. And so the idea here is I just want to hold this up here, and you can use different terminology if you want to. But basically, we've got to remember where we're going in the long term. And we've got to remember what our focus is for this year so we don't just sort of drift through the year. And we've got to have an action plan that specifies who's actually going to do what by when. And our goal really in business planning is that what we do every single day will relate to that long-term heavenly view. Isn't that really the way we want to live life? That everything we do today actually matters for eternity. And that's what we mean. That's what we mean by business planning and these three different vantage points of our business plan. This kind of restates in a little different way. It restates kind of the same thing, but it's arranged not in a form of like those Russian nesting dolls, like one within the other, but rather they're arranged in kind of a cyclical way. So we begin with our long-term strategy. Our annual strategic plan is formed within that long-term strategy. We wouldn't want them to be at cross purposes with each other. And we develop an action plan. Who's going to do what by when in order to accomplish our plan? And then as we fulfill day to day and week to week and month to month and quarter to quarter, as we fulfill those who does what by when, we're actually fulfilling our year of much fishing, our strategic annual plan. And ultimately, of course, it's our desire to fulfill our long-term strategy. Well, let's just break these down a little bit further then. This is really just kind of an outline form, the business planning model that we teach. And we actually have an example that I could have brought and shared with you, and maybe I should have. I'll tell you why I don't, though. We actually have a sample, if you will, a sample or a case study of a business plan, and I can just share it with you. And I would, and there's no reason that I couldn't. One of the reasons I don't is because it's easy to feel like if I just had a business plan to follow, I could kind of just fill in all the pieces. And I could write a business plan, but remember what I said, plans are worthless, but planning is invaluable. And planning that is effective involves all of those that have interest in the future of my business. And so I can't just write a business plan and fill in all the blanks and fill in all the template, if you will, and present it to my family even and say we've got a business plan. It's something that needs to be planned together. But this is really an outline form. This is that first section of long-term strategy. What do we actually mean by long-term strategy? Well, this is an attempt to answer that question. And so again, these are components of a business plan that should be represented in some fashion in your business plan. And the first one we simply call company culture. And by company culture, we mean who we are and the way that we do things. And we sometimes express it by writing a history of our company, where we've come from. We write a mission statement and we write a value statement. What are our core values? And I know these are familiar thoughts to you. many of you, and we write sometimes a vision of like where we see our company going or becoming in the future. And sometimes we're reticent or reserved about these things. Sometimes it's kind of hard to think about, would I really write like from my heart some of my most deeply held beliefs about where I want my company to go and put it up on the wall? And the answer may be, maybe no. But I need to be able to communicate it with those that matter the most in my business and my company. I've told this story before, and I'll just try to be as brief as I can with it. And I appreciate it. I overheard Gary talking some about what it means to bring those into your company that are not like you. And we experienced a real challenge as our business began to flourish and to grow. We needed what? Well, and this is something that's easy to whine about. We heard about that B&W, bragging and whining. It's easy to whine about. We couldn't find the help that we needed to grow. And two of our, we were interviewing people, and two of the ladies that came in to interview with us for work in our business, and I never even knew it until they were right in front of my face, and we weren't prepared for this, but I realized that both of them had nose rings. And I've never even been that close up to a nose ring before. And I just sat there and I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. I mean, I don't know what to do with it. We didn't have any employee manuals. We primarily hired our daughters, our family, and our one son. He was working now in the business. And we hired some other girls from our church and some other community people and ladies that knew us and respected us. But I'd never seen a nose ring come walking in the door. And I had two of them back to back. And with both of them, I ended up doing the same thing. I said, I don't even know for sure how to feel about this, but I'm just going to tell you how it is. I said, I'm not familiar with nose rings, and I don't know that I'm comfortable with them in the context of our store here. And we ended up having a good conversation with both of them. And I don't need to go any further with that, but I'm just illustrating the fact that we think this company culture and who we are and the way we do things, we think it's just well understood until all of a sudden it's not. And we have to think then about how are we going to communicate who we are and what we believe and why we do what we do to those even that we're interviewing and onboarding into our company. I think I'll just stop with that. We'll run out of time if I don't. I want to talk a little bit about market strategy. It's very important. Sometimes in the business world, the term is used going to market. How are you going to market? That relates to your strategy in the marketplace. And it's basically just a matter of analyzing the market in which you reside and making choices about what products and services you're going to bring to what part of the market. And I think this is very, very important. And this is something that I thought, and I shared it earlier this morning, I thought, boy, we live in a town of 100 people. Surely we're going to do everything we can for everybody that we can. But we learned that was actually a recipe for chaos. It was not a recipe for success. We had to figure out what we could do well, and we had to figure out what our marketplace was interested in and what it could bear in terms of our products and services. And so we did a whole bunch of market research in the beginning, or maybe you could call it economic research. In the beginning of our business, and we tried to figure out, well, how, so that's, I shared earlier, a 20-mile radius around our business only netted 10,000 people. Go out to 30 miles, it only went up to about 15,000 people. So we felt like this business is not going to be able to make it with just our local community. We're going to have to figure out how to draw some people in from away, and we lived right on a highway, a U.S. highway that runs north and south from Canada down to Mexico, Highway 281, and so the traffic count there, Highway 281, is 2,400 vehicles a day, and so we started analyzing, and it was just conjecture, but started to think about how many people could we expect to have stop at our store. And this weighed into our advertising and even some of our store signage and so forth. What can we do to attract people to come in the door? That's a big part of what retail is all about. And so I guess all I'm doing is I'm working there with market strategy and analyzing our market and making some definitive choices about how we intend to serve that market. That's what we mean by market strategy. And getting clear about the fact whether we're a premium premium bakery and deli, or whether we're a discount grocery store. And they're two totally different types of businesses. I alluded to that earlier. That's a question of market strategy. Who are we in this market? And we figured out that, thanks be unto God, we weren't able to get any banana boxes, because that discount grocery thing would not have worked for us at all. I'm going to go to the next slide. I might come back, but I want to go to the next slide. I want to talk about this market strategy just a little bit further. We got a little bit further along in our business, and we realized that, you know what, almost all of our customers fall in certain types and certain buckets, if you will. And so I made a list, actually, and I categorized five different kinds of customers that came in our store. And this is what they were. And locals, those customers within a 20-mile radius of our store, how many did I say there was? 10,000, I think I said. 10,000 people, not households, but people within a 20-mile radius. And we called them kind of locals. Now, I'm not saying that everybody came in the door had a sign on their head that said, I'm a local or I'm an extender, but nevertheless, you start to get a feel for it, and you can tell when people wheel up outside, you can start to tell what kind of a customer they are. And so we had locals, and then we had extenders. And what we mean by that is extended family and friends learning of us from the locals. So all the time, then we would have, and remember I said I knew in the beginning we couldn't make this thing work with those who are within 20 miles. And we would have people say all the time, say, oh, I'm sure your local people, your local community, they must really appreciate your business here, you know, a place to get lunch and so forth. And I always struggled to know how to answer it, because I thought we would never make it if it was just the local community that we were serving. We were thankful for every local. But what we really liked is when they would bring their friends and family from away, and so they would come with family from California and family from New York and all of the 50 states, and they would say, when you're here, when you come see us, we want to take you down to Sawyer, to the Amish store. And that became a little bit of a joke for us, because, you know, we're not Amish, and we knew we weren't Amish, but you can't convince people that you're not Amish if they think you're Amish. And so it was a lesson for us of how united we are in our testimony, whether we want to acknowledge it or not. So we'd hear people on their phones, hey, I'm down at this Amish store in Sawyer. Is there anything you'd like while I'm here? Anyway, I want to say a little bit more on that, because it relates to this market strategy idea. My wife and I, we really didn't like that. We really didn't like let me be clear about what I say. We didn't mind being called Amish. But what we didn't want to do is we didn't want to use the Amish image to sell. So we decided early on, we're going to have a deli, but we're not selling Amish cheese, whatever it is. We're not going to sell Amish cheese, and we're really not going to sell Brethren cheese or Mennonite cheese either. We just want to sell the best cheese. And so we struggled with all that image and so forth. And I actually met with a consultant one time, a free consultant that came through the Kansas Small Business Development Center. And I didn't know whether I had the courage or not, but he was helping me write a business plan before we ever even opened up our store. And finally, I shared that with him. I said, how do we go about acknowledging the fact that, and I think Daryl alluded to this in his presentation this morning, that the Anabaptist people are associated with good food. How can we acknowledge that and yet not leverage it just for sales purposes? And so we even sold from Troyer Cheese Company there in Holmes County, Ohio, we sold their Amish wedding label of food. Maybe you've seen it and probably eaten it. You know, pickles and jar goods of all kinds. We couldn't hardly stand it. Like Amish, we know what that's all about. That's all about marketing a name, and we were trying to avoid it. And he said something very wise to me. He was an outsider, or English, or whatever you want to call him. That's what he was. And I shared kind of that with him just to get a little advice from him. And this is what he said. He said, well, you don't have to leverage it. But he said, embrace who you are. He said, embrace it. He said, don't try to put it off. Don't try to be something other than what you are. He said, if you don't want to leverage it, don't leverage it. Don't bring it into your ads. Don't sell Amish cheese. But don't hesitate to embrace who you are. Don't be ashamed of who you are, is kind of what he was telling me. And I have to admit, it really it really kind of smote me. I thought, well, okay, so I don't want to. I don't want to. And then I would watch customers come in our store, and I'm still talking about market strategy and what we're providing for people. And I realized as we went along, especially in the food business and especially in retail food business, where people are coming into our space and our store and they're dining there and they're shopping and they're talking on their phone and taking orders down at the Amish cheese store. And I began to realize that they actually are drawn in here by, and in the food business we hear this term all the time, by experience. They're coming here for an experience. They're coming here for how this place makes them feel. And we need to feel very, very humble about that, and not like by our own power we're doing anything all that special. But I just want to say a little something about my daughters. You know, we did this for our daughters. And we wanted to work together with them, and we wanted them to have the opportunity to work in a business environment alongside their parents and meet and greet customers and serve them and learn kind of some of those rudiments of business and running a cash drawer and a register and some of those kinds of things with mom and dad and us together. But I didn't want to take advantage of them. I wanted them to be happy and to have fun doing it, even as our business flourished. And so our business did flourish. And one of the things I started thinking more and more about is I started thinking about, I have these daughters that are so precious. And they're so... And I know your businesses are the same, but I'm speaking of this market strategy and even the image that we portray to the community. And I think we heard about this some in Paul's talk as well. There are people that are drawn to things that I'm not even hardly aware of, but there are people that are drawn toward it. And I finally just got my mind wrapped around it. I think what they're drawn toward it, even in our daughters, is they're drawn toward holiness. And we live in an unholy world. And they're drawn in to the environment that we have because they yearn to be associated with holiness, even some of the rough and tough customers that we served. And so I had a lot of mixed feelings. I thought, this business, you know, I'm trying to make things happen, and I'm the business manager, if you will, and I'm running our advertising campaign. I'm doing this. Like I said before, I was kind of chief. And yet a lot of times the experience that our customers were seeking was actually manifest and born and given by my daughters. My wife was at home a lot of times because our homeschool is still ongoing and we had younger children at home. A lot of times it was my daughters and I working there together. And I guess my point is simply this. I think that the world around us was drawn to holiness, to the testimony of holiness. And I gained a new appreciation of the power, just the power of purity and the power of holiness to draw people. And I ended up sometimes at the register having some of the conversations, but I think it was the testimony really of our daughters that really drew people in. I didn't intend to go off on that tangent, and I think I'm probably just speaking of the same testimony of your businesses, but our testimony, the testimony of the happiness of our family and the holiness of our lives is more important than all of our ad campaigns. As we think about that which draws people in. I don't know that I need to say a whole lot more about this. Locals, extenders, resorters, we actually found that we're out there in a very rural area, but we actually have, and I had never even really thought about it before, we actually have three resorts within 18 miles to the south of us, down in the county south of us, and there's actually more tourism, if you will, tourism dollars coming into the area than I was aware of. Explorers, there's a big organization there that focuses on Kansas exploration, and then hunters. I never fathomed the dollars of retail, really, that came into our country and into our store that's driven by hunters. What does that have to do with teaching on business planning? Well, it has a lot to do with it. What it has to do with is understanding intimately who our customers are and where we're meeting them and how we're serving them. And I need to move beyond this slide because these particular titles have no relevance to you and to your business. But it is relevant to know who they are and how you're serving them. what your, in marketing terms, we call this what your unique value proposition is. What is that particular area of product and service that you can most uniquely provide value to your customers in? That's what we mean by market strategy. And once again, you don't have to call it market strategy, but that's what I'm referring to, is that your business and the products and services that you provide are appropriately matched to the people that are coming into your store or into your business. I think I'm going to just move to this annual strategic plan, kind of a second dimension or vantage point or view of the business plan, and it's developing an annual strategic plan. And this again is just kind of an outline or a table of contents of the business model that we teach. But the SWOT analysis, if you're not familiar with it, again, it would be kind of a military, maybe in law enforcement background is where the term actually comes from. But a SWOT analysis is simply a situational analysis. It's an attempt to discern where are we at? What's our situation? And SWOT is an acronym that means strengths. What are our strengths and what are our weaknesses? And what are the opportunities that we have? And what are our threats? What could bring our business to a halt? What could bring it to a close? What is a threat? What is an outside threat? I mentioned it earlier, COVID probably hit all those boxes in a way. It seemed like it ended up being a strength for us, and it was a real opportunity, and yet it was a threat. It was all kinds of things for us. But that's really what a SWOT analysis is. And we use a SWOT analysis as a tool to discern where we're at. And where we're at then gives us a place from which to say, so what are we going to focus on in the next year? If this is our area of strength, and we have a weakness here, and we see opportunity there, and we feel like there's threat there, what are we going to focus on in the next year? And that leads me back to that thought of the year of much fishing. Well, the year of much fishing really is the decision to discern from that SWOT analysis, what are the strategies that we could employ this year? Is this the year to add the discount grocery or not? And winnowing through those ideas leads us to choose a handful of key strategies that will be our particular focus area for the year. And we then are able to document our annual plan. So we're able to write a financial plan that matches the strategy that we have chosen. In the year of much fishing, Matt Snader had a particular set of needs. He needed a boat and he needed time, and they needed places to go and so forth. And so there's a plan that develops and unfolds around our chosen strategy. And I would just say this documentation of annual plans, there's five areas of annual plans here, and there's a handful of them, five, and these are the five primary areas of business. We call them sometimes the five functional areas of business. People or HR, in other words, do we have the manpower in place to implement our chosen strategy or not? And I may not have time to fully develop this, but I wanted to get more toward the end of our business journey where we were doing, in essence, a SWOT analysis and saying, one strategy that we have is to hire a manager, hire a store manager, hire somebody to be like a COO of our family business, and hire more and more people to sustain the growth that is happening within our business. That's a strategy that would have been different than anything we'd ever done before. I had been the chief before that time, so that's a strategy. And our plans would look different had we chosen that strategy. Another potential strategy for us is let's not do that. Let's not grow this business with our ownership. Instead, let's find another family that would have an interest in it and bring them in with us. and plan a gradual time of transition and then sell the business to them. That's a strategy. That was on our list of strategies. And another strategy that would be, what if we just wind it all down and have a very thoughtful and methodical and careful liquidation and sell out as far as we can and close the doors for the last time and just close our business? I'm just laying out what I mean here by choosing a strategy and then wrapping plans around it. Plans relating to people, plans relating to finance, plans relating to our operations, to marketing and sales. So we ended up choosing a strategy, and our preferred strategy that we chose was to find another family. And we spent a period of 2 years trying to find another family that would work with us and that we could gradually transition to, eventually sell ownership to them, and withdraw ourselves from the family, from our family business. And the long and the short of it is this: we weren't able to do so. And that left us feeling some angst. And at times even a degree of failure. We thought, how could it be that we have this business that's wanting to grow and we can't even keep it going and we can't find somebody else to sell it to? And so we had another plan. We defaulted then to our third strategy, which was, well, we're going to have to figure out how to bring this thing to a graceful conclusion and lock the door and move on. And so we did that. And 6 months to the day before we locked the door, we made a public announcement to our community and to our employees, of which we had six of, you know, our family, it was about six of us working there, and we had about six other non-family employees at that point in time. So we announced it to the community, we announced it to our employees, and we announced it to our customers. In 6 months, from April the 19th, on August the 19th, we're going to close the door and discontinue our business operation. And I guess my point that I want to stress is this, is rather than a name it and claim it type of rationale for business planning, we actually did not have our preferred outcome come to pass. And so we moved on to our secondary plan, if you will, which was to conclude our business operations in October of 2024. I want to touch just the action plan very, very briefly. I just want to say this is a model that we follow within Anabaptist Financial as well. Remember, an action plan just involves establishing goals on a quarterly basis, breaking down our annual plan into bite-sized pieces, and documenting and being held accountable to who is going to do what by when. Who is going to do what by when to execute our annual plan. I think we'll just go brief with that. Even if this is a Will Rogers quote, even if you're on the right track, you will get hit by the train if you just sit there. One other graphic involving those three different vantage points of the business plan, and that's really what I want to leave with here, is simply that anything that we have shared about business planning is just, we just want to strengthen the tool in your hand to help move your business forward in the preferred direction for it. And with that, we want to be subject, of course, to the will of God and as you perceive your preferred direction for your business. We only have about a minute left. I had a couple different stories I was going to tell. I think maybe I'll just cut it back to just one of them. I just want to tell you this. We experienced some feelings of failure and frustration that we weren't able to sell our business, and we can't hardly go to town even to this day without people stopping us and pleading with us and trying to convince us that we did the wrong thing. And we feel like that we did the right thing in bringing our business to a successful conclusion, even though we were not able to obtain a buyer for it. There's something kind of special happened. I just thought here on the tail end of a AF business seminar, I would just share this little story. Went to another AF business seminar in another state. This one was actually in the state of Missouri. And there's actually somebody there that was starting up a brand new business, kind of like ours. And they were starting to buy in equipment and so forth, and they ended up calling me at home, and I'll just go brief with the story, but we ended up selling the contents of our store, some of our leftover inventory, all of our equipment from door to door. And they came out with about three trailers and U-Hauls and loaded everything up and hauled it over into Missouri. And we never, ever, ever, ever could have imagined such a thing. And on January the 6th of this year, they opened their brand new family business in Miller, Missouri. If any of you get an opportunity to go there. And they utilized all of the, not our business name and not our business location, but they utilized all of everything that was left in our business to establish their new. And it makes us feel very, very, very good. Our time is spent. We need to conclude. We just want to say the Lord be with you and with us all as we try to wisely and prudently plan with intention and direction for our future according to the will of God. Thank you.